You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio. Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're going to be talking about
nature
and nurture, whether it's for child rearing or for you to understand more about yourself and potentially the relationship you're in. We're going to take a look at whether the psychological components of behavior and the biological components have more to do with the DNA, chemistry of how you're born, or the environment that you're raised, the society you grow up in.
This is interesting.
So there's a couple of different frames of thought on this, by the way.
Okay.
And there are extreme views. So last night I was watching some videos on YouTube. We were looking at them together, sharing some of the comments that these presenters were making, and came across some very interesting things, because some people are a little bit more one-sided than the other, and some are a little bit more open to the impact that if you're like purely it's nature that causes us to be how we are. Some people also say, well, there's a little environmental factor. And others say it's completely society. People have no control over what they're doing except for what society trains them to. Which do you think it is? Let us see. Let us go to slide one. As we skip past our little books here, remember, 90 Day Soulmate, The Story of Love, and While Victoria Dreams, two of our books that really paint a picture of what you can do in a relationship. And The Story of Love, a romantic comedy of the reality of what happens when you find love. Let's see if I can move to the next slide. Here we go. Nature versus nurture. Very similar, aren't they? Nature, nurture.
Yes, two letter different.
Sometimes I have a very hard time spelling nurture. It just doesn't seem right. It's not natural for me to spell nurture. So the first slide we actually want to talk about is the extremes of beliefs in psychology on the impact that these have on people. So let's go all the way to the extreme of nature, where it's purely the genetics, the hormones that are running through our bodies, the neural chemical impulses in our brains, and the immutable personality traits as a effect of all this. Some people believe that you have personality traits that you're born with that develop over time and that society has little if nothing to do with it. On the other extreme is nurture, that it's all the environment, it's conditioning, it's what you're used to, what you're not used to, how you're trained, external impact. So you come across a stimulus. I don't know, the room's cold. And the first reaction is to put a sweater on, and that warms you up, and you feel better about it. And now every time the room is cold, you look for a sweater to put on. So it's programming yourself, conditioning. I think we go back to, what does a baby do?
Crying.
For what?
For food, for the sleep, for pain, and
for everything.
No, but also right now I see in some studies start to develop in some kind, they recognize the kind of the crying of the baby, and then you know when is that the baby have a pain or the baby have a hungry or cannot sleep or is they need to change the diaper. So
for the type of crying.
Yeah, they right now is developing this history. Yeah.
So we need some AI, some like Alexa app that interfaces with our children or babies and tells us, oh, the baby is hungry. Mm-hmm. Actually, Alexa talks, the baby is hungry.
Mm-hmm.
But Alexa's only 7 years old now, so I don't know if she should be doing stuff like that.
She don't need food.
So. Alexa doesn't cry for food, does she?
Yeah.
She just cries for her money every time. Would you like to subscribe to that? No, I don't. I just want to listen to this song.
Okay, I have your credit card.
No. Yes. No. You said no, no, no. Triple negative. That's a... Never mind. So, but going back to the baby crying, is that, say the baby's uncomfortable because it's hungry. And it starts crying, right?
Yeah.
And someone, oh, why is the baby crying? And first thing you do is you sniff the baby. Okay. Doesn't smell like it needs to be changed. So now the baby, let's see, maybe it's hungry. So you start feeding the baby and they stop crying and they start smiling and goo goo and gaga. Now the baby knows, I'm hungry. I get food when I cry. I'm going to keep doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I do that.
I know.
Can we eat now?
Go cooking.
So those complete nurture pieces, like a baby crying to get food, learning that behavior and what works for them, or baby falls, little child falls. We've had this conversation, right? The child falls and starts crying and doesn't move, and the parent comes over and picks the child up. Oh, now I know when I hurt myself, I need to be comforted by my parent by crying, getting picked up. So if that becomes a learned behavior, rather than the parent going, oh, you know, come on, get up, come on over here, I'll hug you. And now the baby has to come up, and or the young child has to come up. And I thought you said your mom did that, right?
Yeah, my mom programmed like that. She never picked me up. She said, oh, you could come on here. I hope you're here.
You come running over. And she keep moving away.
Like, yeah, yeah.
And then you come over this couch and then go, says, come up this rope.
She said, see the butterfly? When I see that, my mama is gone. So I am here right now.
I'm in the U.S. How did I get here?
Yeah. And I said, come. And she said, no.
No, no. So, in any case.
So it's a Mother's Day, by the way.
Oh, it's Mother's Day. That's
right. Talking about the mother.
Mom, it's all good. Any case, so in celebration, actually, this is one of the reasons we're doing this, DNA versus nurture or nature versus nurture, is that in spirit of Mother's Day, you know, have we been mothered? Mothered by our chemistries, mothered by the environment and
society,
our family.
Yeah.
So let's talk more about this. So the next thing is, if we're talking strictly nature, what is nature for humans? There's this thing called DNA. It's all in our DNA. Our DNA, a special substance that has been handed down to us after generation and generation of being in our family, molded and changed over thousands and millions of years through evolution, evolutionary biology. It is, the DNA stands for deoxyribonucleic acid, which, when you actually look at it, it's incredibly simple and incredibly lots of it.
Complex.
Right? So it's complex and simple at the same time. It's almost like the data in a computer.
Yeah.
Ones and zeros.
It starts to be programmed. And...
it's just a program.
Yeah.
But they use chemicals for the program, not magnetic little particles on a disk. So the... Chemical programs that are in DNA, what are they? Ask the question, what are they? What are they? Here they are. So on the nature side, we're going to be looking again at genetics, being hormones, neurochemicals, and I think I might have missed a slide here. Let me see if I've got it back here. Oh, maybe I deleted it. Who knows? It could be gone now.
So is it natural or natural behavior?
It's natural selection by me. It's nature. Okay, so you've got nurture, nature, and natural selection.
Yeah.
I think that all works in conjunction with each other. But if what's missing, let me see if what's missing is missing here. Wow. How did that all go away? I lost loads of slides. Oh, well, who cares now? We'll go back to this one. Apologize for this little diversion. But if you see the little ladder, the twisty ladder on the left there, the DNA, it's made up of this deoxyribonucleic acid. It's basically a sugar-type molecule. with these four chemicals on it. I'll just say GAT, and I can't see the other one at the moment in time, but they're just four different chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And these four chemicals are bonded together to each other in this like ladder, this spiral ladder, in a code. And it's just basically ones and zeros, or one, two, threes, and fours,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's just four different chemicals, and they're bonded and bonded. And depending on how they're laid out, you know, how tall we are, our eye color, our height.
Mm-hmm. Your color of the eyes, this, yeah, this in part of this.
All this. So our arm length, how tall we are.
Yeah.
We've said height, tall, and a few times now. How we develop.
So when you see that we are in the what side for your DNA, you start to have a pattern for what you like for eat. So say you like drink coffee
right.
or eat chocolate or this, because you're depend of your DNA, you like something more the other stuff. So
there's a lot of stuff that's true.
Yeah.
Because they said what are you likely to potentially get as a disease. That's something they're checking the DNA for now too.
Mm-hmm. And some also part of your face, you have yeah. this part in the here.
The ridgeline. Oh, the widow's peak. Yeah, I have yeah. the opposite.
Oh, how about these?
The cleft chin.
Yeah. So all these is in your DNA. So.
Whether you sneeze, when you sneeze when you eat chocolate, if mm-hmm. you like coffee, if spicy food bothers you,
mm-hmm.
all this stuff. If you all listen to Duran Duran. No,
yeah.
that's not in there. How much Neanderthal? That was another one. Neanderthal. Mm. How much Neanderthal do you have?
You have.
What does that mean? I've got some Bigfoot upstairs, but no Neanderthal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of Bigfoot. Hoping there's Bigfoot. But going back to it, is the DNA, this is also known to be contributing factor, at least by some, for personality traits. Immutable personality traits. There's actually a theory in psychology, and they talk about the leader, the traits of a leader, and that you're born with them, that's part of you. And then others are like, well, you develop them, and maybe it's a combination. But all these things are part of it. I think what we're going to get to at the end is a conclusion that may be positive for all of us, I hope.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think? Maybe. And then going back to nurture, we have the picture of the world and the people around the world, because it's like we take care of the world and it develops into something. The world also takes care of us, society, what we eat, where we live, school, work, government,
mm-hmm.
all those things, other people, charities, that those things all impact us and how our behavior is and how we respond. So those are the two pictures, the little ladder and the world with the people running around it. The two extremes I call them binomial, like you have a one or a zero, you have nature, nurture. Well,
mm.
there's actually maybe a spectrum
yeah.
of ranges that our DNA versus our environment
mm.
has in our development, which I think everyone kind of understands that already. But let's break this down into the different studies of psychology and the impact of human development. We can look at being the strict biology sense, where it is genetic, hormonal, neurochemicals that run around our bodies that determine our behavior and what we do and the choices we make. That is strictly biology. Or you can get back into a little bit more of psychoanalysis, where we look at innate drives. So aggression, the drives for aggression, drives for hunger, like I need to feed myself, sex drive, that those are innate drives. Those now look at where we are, who we are, what's available, and it pushes us into certain behaviors because we're driven for those behaviors. And then we also add into it social upbringing. So I think if you look back in time and you go, okay, we're living in a cave. What is, how are we brought up in that cave? What are we taught as cave people?
Mm.
How to act? Next, we go to cognitive psychology, which now you look at the innate mental structures that we have, parts of our brain that develop as we age, and those parts of our brain lead to different abilities of how to think, different levels of activity in certain areas. those we develop schemas, ways of thinking, that we have a thought pattern based upon this. What we do first, what we do next, what we do after that. Perception and memory is constantly being changed by the environment. So we talked about this. Mm-hmm. You go into the woods. A bear comes out of the woods. You've never seen a bear before. And it's like, "Arr!" And it scratches you. And you think you're fearful for your life. And you run out of the woods. Now, forever, your perception and memory has this bear attack in it. Mm-hmm. And your behavior has changed. Your behavior has changed because of it. So environment can impact you that way. And this is like a very direct way. So let's look at less direct ways. So I guess it's not less direct, but humanism. So this psychology developed around a humanistic approach. Some of you may have heard of Maslow. Deficiency in growth needs. Societal influences on self-concept. So there's a lot more now of external factors that impact our behaviors, our choices, and what we do. And when we come back after this break, we're going to talk more about
the spectrum.
The spectrum? Mm-hmm. And we'll talk more about Maslow's hierarchy of human needs and behavior right after this message. We'll see you in a minute.
Once upon a time, there was a couple and a newborn baby. Or should I say, a single mum. This brave young lady left her 9-to-5 job to follow her passion and started a consulting business. Her friends helped out. She travelled the world, met new people, and again came home. The woman dated to find a man who would fill her life and fit her plan. She met a guy who checked out ladies. That burned her up. That made her crazy. Other guys were full of verve. Into their self. No room for her. And one time she met a man with patch over eye and axe in hand. Then one day she had enough. Her little boy was all grown up. Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about nature and nurture and the impact of each on human behavior. Mm-hmm. So we left off with, we were talking about the spectrum of psychology and the behavior of people and what part was biology, what was innate drives, what was how we react to the perception or the perceptions of the environment and how they change and our memories change from impact with bears. We talked about bears. Mm-hmm. And then humanism was Maslow and the deficiency in growth needs, which we'll get into. And what we didn't touch yet was behaviorism, which means that everything, all our behaviors are behavior-based. What does that mean, all our behaviors are behavior-based?
But what is the difference between behavior and cognitive psychology?
So let's go back to behaviorism, which there's a lot of overlap, but the main thing is that behaviorism says we have something happen, like a stimulus. I step on something, I start tripping, I start falling, I roll and I don't hurt myself. So mm-hmm. stimulus, my response is to roll. I don't hurt myself, so I have a reward. And it's very much behaviorally programmed new actions. So now that I know that if I fall, if I roll, I don't hurt myself, I may now do that forever. So it's I learn a reaction, but it's you do some action and you get a reward or you get a penalty. And based upon our feedback from the environment or from others, we then either continue with that behavior, because now it's learned, or we stop that behavior. Whereas the cognitive psychology is more of an immediate strong impact, and it's not, it's like a single lesson, the bear attack.
Okay.
You know, that I know now I have to stay away from bears.
It's more rational versus analysis.
It's like instant programming.
Okay.
I could liken it to, one is more of choice based. You make choices. So if you go into the behaviorism, is that as a human being, the big difference, and this is one of our past shows, we talked about being a coder, reprogramming the way you think to lead to different behaviors.
Okay.
So we're talking about this piece, is that when you have a stimulus, you think about how immediately, sometimes you react immediately. And when you react immediately, there's no thought.
Okay.
So that's not behaviorism. Now I'm thinking about it. I choose to do something. I get a result. And based upon that result, I analyze, is this the result I want? Is the reward I want? I found something in the garbage and I decided to try tasting it. And when I ate it, it tasted good, but I got really sick. And now I think about it and I go, you know what? It's probably not a good idea to eat something out of the garbage. That's like a direct result. But it's a choice of action, yielding a result, a reward or a penalty, then adding to your body of knowledge on how to make decisions. And so it's really behavioristic based.
Okay.
So it's like that thing where the baby was crying, but now that the baby's no longer a baby, and the baby's really thinking more, and it's a young child or even an adult, it's much more is that we learn from the world based upon what the actions we choose to do.
Okay.
Let's go to, we talked about Maslow and the hierarchy, and this was very interesting. I thought that Maslow talks about this hierarchy of human, call them needs or development or behavior. You can put it in any thought. I won't use the actual words because we talk about concepts more so than the exact terminology sometimes. That there's something called needs, which are basic for human living. They're called that if you don't have these needs met, if these needs aren't met, you can't survive.
Okay.
So what we're talking about is like the physiological needs, such as things needed for human survival, air, food, drink, shelter, clothing, warmth, in order to continue on the species, sex, and sleep. Without those things, you don't even care about the next level. So these are the levels, the hierarchy of human needs or behaviors. You're going to do all the behaviors necessary to meet the needs, the bottom needs that if you don't have, you don't exist. So your behaviors will be really focused on all the stuff on the bottom first. So the survival needs. Once you are able to survive at a level where you feel
comfortable,
you'll be looking for health. I want to take care of myself. I'm looking to make some money. I want to have shelter.
Family.
That there's a lot more, it's a little bit more complex set of needs at this point.
Okay.
But these are now achievable because you don't spend all your efforts, your mind, your motivation on the lower needs. If you're really, really hungry,
you're not thinking about it.
Yeah, not thinking about tomorrow.
Yeah, not thinking about so half a family if you don't have to take care of yourself.
It's difficult. Yeah, you may want to have sex, but you may not want to have a family. Right?
It happens.
So it does happen. So the safety and security piece is once you take care of your basic needs. The basic needs, you may forgive or forego safety and security in order to meet, I need to eat, I need to survive. And that's why some people who are under that kind of stress will do behaviors that may not be good for their own safety or security, because they are looking for whatever it takes to survive. Let's move to after the safety and security level. You're looking at love and belonging.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of us are fitting into that category. That's like the one that's the most important one before we move on beyond that, which is we want friendships. We want to have a family. We want relationships and connection. And the piece of the connection is like intimate connection. We want to have that ability to have someone who understands us deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like really, that seems to be the dividing line between the you know, this is like you're at a good point at this point. If you've hit the first bottom three levels here, the red level, the orange level, and the yellow level, you're to the point where you're starting to feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
And when you start to feel good about yourself, you start developing
The green one,
self-esteem. You're starting to get confidence. You're having achievement, respect. You're looking for respect and you want respect. And you're looking for uniqueness, which is kind of interesting. Uniqueness. Now I want to be different from everyone else. I want to express my difference to others. We talk about sometimes that if you're in a country where there's a lot of poverty, that sometimes people, but you can, say, make basic ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a lot of community connection, and there are not people looking to be different, but they're looking to be part of the community. They're looking for friendships. They're looking to get along. They don't have the free time to say, how do I want to be different?
Mm.
You know, I want to be a musician. Well, you can't be a musician. You got to go figure out how to eat.
Yeah.
You know, that, so this self-esteem thing that allows us now this, we can see the world differently and says, I now want to express myself more.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that is that now we've got achievement, confidence, people respect us, we respect others. Where do we go next? We're always uncomfortable?
Yes.
So we're always looking for the next level.
Yes, maybe we have to create one other color in the top, purple color.
Purple beyond this.
Yeah.
But self-actualization is the blue one. And you hear people about that is that, you know, what is this life about? I'm looking for the spirituality. I'm looking for what comes after life.
And also people looking for the meaning, what is in this planet.
The meaning of being on this planet, the meaning of life, meaning of existence.
Mm-hmm.
Acceptance. I want to be able to do whatever I want whenever I want to do it. Spontaneity.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the level. So if you go from the bottom up again, the bottom is there is no spontaneity. Every day you're looking for my next meal. Where am I going to sleep? How am I going to stay warm?
Yeah.
How am I going to do that safely and securely? I want to maybe protect my family. And then you go to the next one is that I want to belong to this community. I want to love them. I want them to love me. And now that I'm part of all that, not only love them and love me, but I want you to love me for who I am. And I want to be a little different. And then lastly, not only do I want to be a little different, but I want to understand why I'm here. And how can I make a bigger impact? And what's beyond all this? And it kind of makes sense. No one,
yeah.
No one comes into life and goes, I want to self-actualize. Right? There's all these things we go through.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's very hard for a child to self-actualize because they haven't hit these other things in their life yet.
Yeah.
And some of these core drives and motivations haven't exhibited themselves or developed yet. What do you mean they haven't exhibited themselves or developed yet? I think we're going to talk about that in our next section.
Okay.
Should we roll into our next section? I guess we can start it.
We can do a little flavor, yes, of these. So,
so
go ahead.
The next section we want to talk about, and this is going to lead into the end of our show, It's going to be the nature versus nurture philosophy. We were watching a presentation by a gentleman by the name of Dr. Russell Barkley. And the presentation and theory behind this is called Be the Shepherd. I believe it was his 23rd point in the presentation I was watching.
Okay.
He claims that your child's genetics have nothing to do with you. That they are developed over the millions of years of development of us as a species, and their genetics are what's predisposing them to behaviors, to their capabilities, to their actions.
Okay.
That parents cannot design their children.
Okay.
Okay. That nature and evolution do not allow for such a thing to happen. That the strength and the pull, the programming of nature, there's so much. Like if you look at the iceberg, right, the iceberg of human existence, there's this little level of us that floats above the ice that thinks we can go left, thinks we can go right, thinks we can be an astronaut, thinks we can be a musician, but there's all this stuff under the ice. Mm. Under the water. So above the water, below the water. Below the water is breathing, physically. I can move. I can do this. I want to eat. That there's this general sameness to everyone, and this sameness that goes across cultures and across species, not species, goes across humans everywhere, is because of
evolution
for millions of years, or 10, depending on what you believe. Mm-hmm. But this theory, this Dr. Barkley's theory, is that because of this development that took place over thousands and thousands and thousands of years, we may feel we have some uniqueness and we're going to teach our children to be unique, but there's this underlying DNA, this chemical component that you can't separate from the child. And that has more to do with how they develop than what you can and how you can impact the child. So we saw this presentation, and there's some other things. So what he says is, despite all that, I'll put this quote up, yet we have the Mozart effect, the belief that if I play classical music to my uterus when I'm pregnant, I'm going to have a genius. The fact that if I can just put enough crib toys over his crib or her crib, he or she is going to have all these neurons exploding their synapses, and he or she will be a brilliant mathematician. He goes on to say, you don't get that degree of power. You don't get that degree of power.
So we can discuss this in the next section.
In the next section?
Mm-hmm.
When we come back, we'll talk more about the Mozart effect. Does it have an effect? Doesn't it? And more about nature and nurture when we return to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Right after this.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan, and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to The Mozart Effect, starring Lizette
and Jim.
We were listening to music in the break and something happened and we changed. We're smarter now.
What?
We were listening to Mozart in this room. Room. Anyway, when we left, we were talking about the Mozart effect and how this gentleman, Dr. Russell Barkley, thinks that we as humans think that by putting music on our bellies to give the unborn baby this Mozart music. We can program them to become mathematical geniuses. And he says you have little to no impact, that it's all DNA. So I need to go back to the slideshow here to see more. Where is the slideshow? It's gone forever. All right, here we go. There it is. So this is where we left off. Claims that child's genetics have nothing to do with you and has everything to do with evolution. We'll go to the next slide, though, because this is where it gets good. Parents' role in a child's development is not insignificant. It's not insignificant, but it's not deterministic. Parenting style, education, and social experiences have influence. He goes on to say, your child's genetics have more to do with who they are than anything else. So his claims, we'll get to it actually less further down the slide. Let's go through his claims first, and then we'll go back to our conversation about mm-hmm. it. That a stimulation-rich environment is better than a deprived one. So he is giving into that, yes, stimulation does help. It's better than having one that has no stimulation or deprivation. So deprivation of stimulation is bad. Stimulation to a point is good, but he calls something threshold. Threshold effect is that you only need a certain amount of stimulation. Anything beyond it does not anything more. That a child's development can't be 2 times, 3 times, 8 times, 20 times faster by stimulating 8 times, 20 times faster. The idea that if a little bit is good, then more is better, he says, is not something we should really hang our hat on. And finally, genetics are the critical factor in child development. DNA and the trait mosaic of biological family is important to keep in mind. Your child is born with more than 400 psychological traits that will emerge as they mature, and they have nothing to do with you. He's almost fatalistic here.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do. Your child has 400 traits that you can't do anything with.
You put the child in the jungle and figure out what happened. And pick it in 25 years later.
400 different traits.
Yeah, he has to develop it alone.
I think there's... I think I understand the point, as long as you don't take it to an extreme. There are multiple, as he says, over 400 psychological traits that develop based upon the child's DNA. However, you can influence the amount of expression of these 400 traits. We talked about, you know, when somebody's, you see their child for the first time and they're 6, 7 months old.
Yeah, but also when you see a twin.
Twins,
maybe
okay.
Have the similar DNA.
Yep.
And become different person with different skill. So how you demonstrate this theory with that?
The expression of those traits can be amplified. And also the person themselves, their brain is slightly different. Every neuron that develops slightly different allows another neuron develop slightly different. So it's you plant two trees next to each other. They come from the same seed. Yet their branches are slightly different. The heights they get are slightly different. How much fruit grows on one versus the other is slightly different. So those would be like twins. And if you plant one in the desert and you plant one in a swamp, they're going to have completely different. They might both not grow. They might both, the seeds might rot in one and dry out to nothing in a different environment. So environments matter, but as we talk about, that seed for the tree will only be that tree. That tree's not going to be, like if you plant a oak tree, you're not going to get a banana tree.
You manipulate.
The oak tree may think it's a banana tree, but you're not going to.
That's
a different show.
Yeah.
The point of the DNA and trait mosaic, the traits do come from family. So your family, like Zed and my DNA, if mixed for our children will share some of our DNA, but we'll also share some of the DNA of our parents and great-grandparents and all the species.
Neighbors.
What?
Sorry.
There's another good joke in there, but we're not gonna talk about that, right? Who are you talking about?
Hmm? It's okay. We don't have children together.
Yet. Okay.
So. Not yet.
Fine.
Okay. Sorry for it.
That's a good interruption, though.
Okay.
I don't know where we are right now. So anyway. So his claim that parents have little to do, they can do a little bit. It's almost like you can't stop your child from developing the way they're going to develop. Meaning you can't change their direction, but by depriving them of some things, you can stop them from expressing those traits as strongly, which could be a good or a bad thing. But let's go to what someone else thinks, though. That's the fatalistic nature approach, that it's only nature. It's only how you're born. On the other hand, there is there are other people who lean towards nurture as being. So there's this gentleman by the name of Laszlo Polgár, and he has something which we call the chess experiment. He believed that geniuses are made, not born. He sought to prove that any healthy child, if taught early and intensively, can be brought up to be exceptionally successful in any field. He married a fellow teacher who shared his views, and together they had three daughters. And they determined that chess would be an objective measure of success, unlike art, music, or something else that's much more subjective, or writing, or doing a show on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
That chess, because it was a game of skill, you would compete against somebody, there's a winner, loser, that would be an objective test of his method. Some of the things they don't tell you, well, one does and one doesn't, is that he actually wrote this book about this prior to having children and prior to getting married. He also wrote to various women trying to solicit them to marry him to carry on this experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, very, very ingenious and driven person.
Yeah.
I wonder if he had it in his DNA.
Mm-hmm. No.
No. What they also don't tell you is that he had over 10,000 books on chess. So he was a chess teacher as well as somebody who wanted to show that his children could learn chess. The interesting thing was he wasn't that good at chess. Like, he wasn't highly ranked. He was a good teacher of it, but he himself wasn't highly ranked or highly skilled in comparison to what you're going to find out. So he took on his teaching of his daughters. So chess had been considered, and this is what was interesting. He ended up with three daughters in this process, and chess had been long considered a male-dominated and that women were unable to compete. But he stated that women, because of the results of his experiment, it is shown that women are able to achieve results similar in fields of intellectual activities to those of men. Chess was and is a form of intellectual activity. Accordingly, he rejects any kind of discrimination that would be otherwise presented in this effect, that his results show that women can compete intellectually in chess, which means intellectually in other areas as well. So he got some coaches, and with his wife and the coaches, he trained his daughters to play chess. He did this from a young age. So what was interesting, at the age of four, his eldest daughter, at the age of four, was able to beat him in chess. So this is how good he is, or how bad he was at playing chess. He claims that it's showing that he wasn't like some kind of genius, that
a good teacher.
He was a good teacher.
Make a better student.
Yes. Know? Well, also, he was smart enough to hire coaches as well.
Mm-hmm.
So not only his perspective, but the perspective of others. So what was the result? The result was that Susan, the eldest, who was, I believe, born in 1969, became the first female grandmaster of the sport in 1991. If I can do my math correctly, that's at the age of 22 years. The second child, Sophia, became an international master, and they said that she really didn't care so much about chess. She wasn't as interested in practicing and learning more. But Judith, who had been the youngest of the family, the youngest daughter, she went on to excel further than any. She became the youngest player in the world to reach grandmaster status at the age of 15. She also racked up victories against the likes of Boris Spassky, Magnus Carlsen, and Garry Kasparov, who I really don't know many of those people, but Kasparov does ring a bell. And he had once declared that women by their nature are not exceptional chess players. And he was beaten by Judith.
Boom.
So, boom. So he must not have been too exceptional, but he was actually a world-class chess player, beaten by Judith. Three of his daughters, going back to the gentleman doing the experiment here, and this was a committed experiment because it went on for years and years years, but all three daughters became chess champions. Very good, internationally recognized. Laszlo Polgár is convinced that he has proven that if you take anybody and you give them hard work, training, and focus, you can raise their ability so much that they become fantastic at whatever it is they are trying to achieve. Now, this is a mental ability test, right? So there's not too much of a physical ability in this. Physically, you have to see the chessboard and move pieces, but it's not like a sport where you have to have maybe mental and physical ability depending on the sport. The interesting thing was they said that some of the kids had, I'm not sure if it was each or together, they had over 10,000 hours, 10,000 hours of practice and training to get to this level. So
remember, after 10,000, you become expert.
After 10,000. So what do you think? Do you think nature versus nurture?
I think in the percent between one to the other, and I can say nature 30% and the nurture 70%.
I think it's nature 70% and nurture 70%.
I agree.
What I mean by that is that if you have the effort to put in, and this is where we go to good news for all of us, is that we always talk about plasticity, right? Neuroplasticity, that our brains continue to grow and function at this age. Mm-hmm. This age, my age, is probably older than most of you, much older than my wife. That the ability to learn new things, still available at our age, allow us to take on new subject matter, new skills, and that it doesn't actually matter what our nature is. Mm-hmm. If we continue to learn and put in the effort in, and I think we were watching another guy who said that when you feel like awkwardness in your learning, that's when you're actually building your brain. When you push yourself to an area that you're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's like when you're working out and your muscles hurt. That's when they're building. Mm-hmm. When your brain is racked, when it's difficult, when it's tough, when you're trying to figure it out, that's when you're getting smarter in that subject.
Mm-hmm. You become an expert for your practice and practice.
Practice, reading, investigate.
And discipline, I guess, is the part of the how you establish, do something and then do recurrent. I told you that sometimes I have to learn second language, for example. And I a little bit talk English, but that is something that is take a time, take a effort, and practice.
So what we believe is that there is a good component that is due to nature, but nature can be overcome, guided, and directed by nurture. And you have the ability to choose your nurture. Now that you're a grown person, you can choose.
Yeah.
You can choose the direction you're going, and that's the good news. And in a show coming up, we're going to talk about quickly learning new subjects, learning new things, finding interest, paying attention, and developing your own set of skills, knowledge, and abilities in the area of your choosing.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim
on LA Talk Radio. Have a good
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.